From Relativity and our Relativity One partners, this is Uncivil Procedure, the eDiscovery podcast. I'm Anna Srunian, program manager on the event marketing team, and here is your host, Relativity Discovery Council and legal education director, David Horrigan.
Thank you, Ms. Srunian, and welcome to Uncivil Procedure, the eDiscovery podcast. In this episode, we delve into a topic that puts more fear into the hearts of lawyers and paralegals than even the rule against perpetuities. Yes, it's math, science, and the law. We have a special guest with us today who actually has some expertise in both math and the law. And of course, as usual, we're going to go through our veritable cornucopia of odd topics that will bring this topic home to you. Of course, it's math and science, so we'll be discussing childhood math traumas, our experiences frying McDonald's French fries, mammals that provide nasal flu vaccine, Austin Powers teeth, Star Trek characters and graduate programs, and of course, Billy Bob's barbecue on the Brazos. But first, Ms. Srunian, a word from our sponsor, Relativity One Partner, Special Counsel.
Support for this episode of Uncivil Procedure is brought to you by Special Counsel. Imagine this, an entire team of eDiscovery experts hyper-focused on your business. Sound too good to be true? Special Counsel's eDiscovery services and solutions are tailor-made for every client and every project, big or small. We take advanced technologies and marry them with what can't be replicated: ingenuity, creativity, and the art of listening.
Thank you, Ms. Srunian, and of course, thanks to our Relativity One partner, Special Counsel. Now let's meet our guest. Colleen Kenny is partner at Sidley Austin. She's also chair of Sidley's Electronic Discovery Task Force. Of course, in our preview, we told you that Colleen excels at math, and that's because during her career, she has been a certified public accountant. She's passed the CPA exam, and she has also, during her career, been a certified management accountant. Please welcome our guest, Colleen Kenny of Sidley Austin. And Colleen, apparently the knowledge of math and science is not limited to you and the Kenny family.
Two of my sons are accounting majors. Shout out to BDO and Alvarez, where they're going to be employed, or are employed.
Nice.
My daughter is a chemical engineer who is now a business major at the University of Chicago Booth Business School. And my other daughter is a social policy and German major who is at law school at the University of Chicago. So,
great stuff. Colleen, Sidley's eDiscovery Task Force, it conjures up images of Elliot Ness and perhaps federal agents going in their task force. What does the task force do?
Oh, I think most firms probably call it an e-discovery practice.
Uh-huh.
It sounds more epic.
It just sounds much more interesting, right? No, it very similar to what you would consider to be a discovery practice. Everything from internal investigations to, you know, more simplified e-discovery aspects of cases, and really everything in between.
I would hope with task force you have matching jackets or something like that.
Hats.
Perfect.
Hats and belts. Big belt buckles. Yeah, no.
Yeah.
But, you know, not only do you have this training as a CPA, you also actually were a CPA for a major accounting firm. What made you decide to leave the numbers behind and go to the glorious world of long, drawn-out sentences?
Well, I think that you answered the question when you said, I was an auditor for a public accounting firm. It is incredibly valuable work. It really is. And it was very interesting when I first started doing it. But I found that my attention span wasn't sufficiently long enough to continue to be in auditing. It just wasn't. I just have a short attention span, so I like switching from project to project, which is why actually the law is perfect, because even if you're on the same case, you're switching from project to project, from thought to thought, from even in as something as simple as reviewing documents. If you're doing it right, you're going from document to document, and you're thinking, always thinking as you're going along. So that actually suited my personality and my skills.
Okay, so you are one of these super hybrid people who excels at multiple disciplines. How many accountants do you think have become lawyers, percentage-wise? I mean, are you one of 1%, 5%, 10%?
No, I don't know. I mean, if I think about it, I know one other practicing accountant who's in my litigation group and a couple of people, associates, who were accountants but never practiced. So
sure.
Out of 100, so maybe it is around 5%. It might be. I mean, I don't know the answer to that, but it can't be a lot. I mean, accounting is a career. I mean, people, it's not like, sorry, Brenna, it's not my daughter. It's not like social policy and German. I mean, where, you know, the goal is to go to graduate school. Accounting is a career. So I don't think a lot of people leave a well-paying career to go do something else necessarily. So there has to be people who really want to be lawyers.
Okay, maybe you could settle a debate that accountants and lawyers have had for years. Which is harder, the bar exam or the CPA exam?
At least when I took the CPA.
Okay.
I'm old enough that I took the CPA in one sitting over 2.5 days at the used to be the Donnelly Warehouse on the South Loop. So they had a big warehouse, old printing factory, and we had tables that were like 3 feet by 2 feet or by 3 feet and a partition between us. And I sat here and the mad eraser sat here. He would erase and the table would jiggle and he would be erasing the table. But you sat there for 2.5 days. Now it's not that way anymore. Now they take it one piece at a time and they take it online and you can take practice and then you can take this and then you can take that. But it wasn't like that when I took it. That was way harder and way more intense than the bar exam.
But the bar exam is 2 days.
But this is 2.5 days of math.
Yeah.
Well, it's not math. It's you have to. It's law, it's almost like law because you're learning the accounting rules and regulations, and you have to know them, the theory and the law and the practice and ethics, and you have to know all of that. And they used to jam that into a test. So 5 years of school, it's like taking one final for 5 days of school or 5 years of school. It was pretty intense.
Is there a Barbary for it?
Yeah, it's not Barbary, but yes, they
similar
have.
To that.
Right. In fact, I worked for what used to be the Glime Delaney CPA Review. I worked for that when they used to. I mean, they might still exist, but Mr. Donnelly, Delaney, Pat Delaney died several years ago. But I used to work for that review book. I taught accounting for a year.
Aha. Uh-huh. Well, Counselor Pappas, Counselor Pelk, it appears that we have been put to shame because we have someone who's taken both exams who says an accountant has it rougher. Which means that I've lost several bar bets over the years, and I will now have to go pay. But, of course, we should introduce our panel today. We've got a dynamic duo. Of course, we've got Constantine Pappas, Senior Manager, Relativity Solutions, and, of course, Daniel Pelk, Senior Manager for Industry Marketing here at Relativity, the dynamic duo of lawyers. And Colleen has already put us to shame, but let's try to make something out of this. Constantine, your experience with math as a kid.
So I first want to say that I think not all bar exams are created equally. And as someone who's taken two different bar exams and passed them, just in case.
Noted.
Yeah, please continue.
I have to say that the Virginia one was much more of a beast than the Wisconsin one. Mm. And that was, we could talk about stories about that experience.
And you had to wear a coat
the
and
wee
tie.
Hours. You had to wear a suit and tie, but you had to wear tennis shoes.
In Virginia?
So you didn't squeak. So you didn't squeak.
So you didn't squeak when you left the room. You could take like a couple pencils and a packet of tissues for crying. And and then you had to have a photographic ID badge. And they told you if you lose it between the first day and the second day, that you would have to go off site, like a 45-minute drive, and get it replaced during the exam. Take exam time to replace it.
You'd be toast.
Right. And so I was very careful with my badge, and I showed up the second day, and I was ready to go. And a guy came in and said, where do we get our badges? And I said, well, we got them yesterday. And he said, yesterday? And he ran out of the room. So there's a Darwin Awards candidate right there. If you show up for the bar exam a day late, you probably are not supposed to be taking the bar exam.
But
yeah,
it's easy.
Yeah, and you did so well in the bar exam, Constantine,
but I noticed
that you definitely bobbed and weaved away from the question of your math experience as a child.
So math experience as a child, I was a pretty good math student. I was an okay science student. I wasn't poor. I got into like advanced science classes, but like math, I actually was planning to be a math major at one point in college and decided to go into comparative literature where the money is.
of course.
So, but like math, and fortunately, I've forgotten all of my math. So it's a real arduous task just to put two numbers together. Now my kids are very good at both. I'd say my son like favors the math side, and my daughter favors the social sciences and literature side. And it's funny because I was just at my daughter's school for a parent day. She just started middle school, and they were doing science, they were doing a geography test. And so they were doing these slides, and it was a quiz. They gave everybody these laptop computers, and you would kind of like buzz in real quick with your answer. And well, the nice thing about math is it doesn't really change, except new math, which I still don't understand what that is supposed to be. But like
freaky stuff, man.
Yeah, like, and so like when I try to help my kids, my daughter says like, you can't do it that way. You got to do it different way. And I'm like, why? What was wrong with the way that we all learned?
Daniel Pelk, before he pivoted to Shakespeare and Goethe and other comparative literature, at least for one brief shining moment, Konstantin Pappas thought about being a math major. Did you ever, in your wildest dreams, consider being any kind of math major?
Not a snowball's chance in anywhere warm, David. Not even a little bit. No.
And our censors here at Relativity, thank you for your discretion on the expletives.
No, math was never my forte. I was better at science than I was at math, but still a little challenged at both. I liked science. I found science interesting. I still find science interesting. I will never watch a math show on TV willingly. Not that there is one.
I was about to ask you, are there any math shows? Okay.
Schoolhouse Rock?
Yeah, but that's 90 seconds long.
Yeah, that's true.
No, what's that other one that's...
Sesame Street?
No, I would know that
one, Daniel.
The Count? No. I have to think about it. It's like a Nickelodeon show where it's like MathNet or something like that, where they all work for this organization. They all have... they all wear these blazers. It's this really cute show where they solve all these math problems.
Math and blazers.
Math. Yeah. Wear tennis shoes so they can not squeak as well.
They don't leave the bar crying. They know their stuff.
I have to go back to that a second. I found that fascinating. I'm imagining a whole room of people wearing tennis shoes and coats and ties. It's like a whole room of Pee Wee Hermans.
Gross.
Have you seen Blippi, the new kids guy? He's like Pee Wee Herman on steroids.
No.
Blippi sings and dances not unlike Pee Wee. But Miss Cerunian, did you ever consider being a math major early in your childhood?
Absolutely not. No, I think the only class, sitting in a room full of all of you very studious people, I'm pretty sure the only class I ever failed in high school was algebra, and I had to take that for a second year. So as soon as I no longer needed math in my curriculum, I was like, see you later. And then like physics, I remember being the worst class I've ever taken. Just miserable. The only thing that saved me was our final exam at the end of the year was a trip to Cedar Point where you like measure stuff.
And angles, speed and velocity.
Cool. Exactly. Exactly what I meant, 100%. Yeah. and that was the only thing that saved me because it was like a group activity. So I was like, great, cool.
Measuring stuff is fun.
How many years of high school math did you need?
I think I only needed to take 2, but because I failed algebra that first time, I had to take it for a third time.
Got it.
True math confessions.
I'm not proud of it, but
no,
you asked the question. So that's how terrible I am at math. And when people say, like, you can't use a calculator in the real world, kids, you can use a calculator in the real world every day.
They let them use them now. So my kids, when they started high school math, they have this very expensive calculator that you have to go out and
scientific
buy.
Scientific calculator.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And then my wife said, there's no way I'm spending the money on that. Let's see if they really need it. So she went to curriculum night and said to the teacher, this calculator costs like $150. And the guy said, there's a 99-cent app you can load on your phone that does the same thing. So kids, another lesson out there, if you need a calculator, use your phone.
Use your phone.
We're really hitting our target audience of young school kids studying
math. Right.
Indeed. And I won't.
All of you kid listeners, thank you for listening.
Parents
to
and children.
I loved math. It's like doing giant puzzles, except geometry, because I have no spatial. Issues with space, like I don't like pulling my car out of the garage because I hit the wall all the time. So I have issues with depth and space. So I never liked geometry, but algebra is like a puzzle. It's fun. It was interesting,
See,
and I
it's
like
comforting
science too.
It's consistent.
And it has an answer. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I liked it.
But I have a theory that there's really two types of people. There's geometry people and then algebra people. Because I like geometry.
What if you're neither?
Then you're Miss Cerunian.
Geometry people be mathing like this. Algebra people be mathing like this.
No, I liked geometry because it made sense and it was spatial and I could see it.
That's what I had issues
with. It was tangible. But algebra was a mystery.
Counselor Kenny, your useful knowledge of the arithmetic arts and sciences has served you well. And of course, well, At last count, 31 states have instituted a technology competency requirement, either through ethics opinions or actually changes to their ethics rules. How are you seeing it out there when you're practicing and dealing with other counsel? Do you find that the era of the Luddite lawyer is ending? Are people getting and embracing math, science, and statistics in the practices that you see?
So I'm going to be a real lawyer and answer that question with one word. Depend.
The big D?
No,
yeah.
Depends. Yes, exactly, the big D. So what I find is that it's a broad array. It is not age. You might think, oh, it's, you know, the young people all get it. You know, no, the young people don't all get it. And the old people aren't all afraid of it. So you get a mix and a match of what people can do. I think that if you say to someone, if I say to one of my partners, what do you do? What is your practice? What is it that you do? And then they tell me what they do. I can find a way to use analytics to help them, to make their practice better. But I have to know exactly what it is they're doing first. And I can't tell them, well, you know, we can use stratified blah, 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 because then I just lose them.
Yeah.
So I think we have to be patient, people who have at least a modicum of understanding. We have to be patient, and we have to understand our audience, and we have to speak to our audience. Because if we don't do that, you're right. It's literally people, they don't want to hear it, even if it saves them time. Even if it makes their life easier, they don't want to hear about it if they don't think they understand it. And they don't need to understand the technology. They need to understand in practical terms what the technology is, what it does, and what the end result is, and how it's going to make their life easier.
Well said by Sidley Austin partner Colleen Kenny. Counselor Pappas, I seem to remember once upon a time, you were discussing the refrigerator doctrine of knowledge of technology.
Correct.
Would you like to share it with our listeners?
Well, many years ago, I was on a case when I lived in Washington, D.C., and the beginning of the case, the partner comes in and explains all the elements of the case, who the players are, what the fact pattern is, the basic legal allegations. And there were some technical aspects to the case, and everyone got a little worried because it was getting a little deep into the science. And he said, look, you don't need to be able to build a refrigerator. You just need to be able to spot one. And I think that lawyers have to do a little bit more than spotting refrigerators these days, but they still don't need to build one.
But they need to know what they don't know.
They need to know what they don't know, and it's very interesting because it's been part of the attorney role since the beginning of the attorney role to understand your client's business. Mm-hmm. And one of my first cases, I literally had to study rocket science for 2 weeks in order to be able to review the documents.
Only took you 2 weeks to understand rocket
science. Impressive. He's the strongest
of
us.
No, that was the deadline that they set for us. It wasn't that I retained it all. Anyway, and that's kind of that's what you have to do when you have a client that does rocket science. You need to learn something about rocket science so you can speak the language. So it strikes me as funny, and at Relativity Fest, one of my sessions, we were talking about this, that some lawyers push back on the legal technology part of the equation, where it seems to me that is something they can transfer from case to case, and it's going to help them, you know, throughout their career, rather than this short-term memory, like, info dump for
principle.
One case.
Right. I learned for one case, Bernoulli's principle.
Yeah.
I learned it for an aircraft case I had.
So, I don't know. That's my take on the refrigerator doctrine.
All right. So, we've got the refrigerator doctrine from Counselor Pappas. Counselor Pelk, apparently you have the Adidas doctrine.
I do, in fact. much, much less impressive than rocket science, but much more applicable, apparently. Sorry, Constantine.
Whatever.
Yeah, I was working on a case between two shoe manufacturers, and I learned everything there is to know about the construction of shoes, the decoration that goes on the outside of shoes, the support systems. I mean, it really is a phenomenally impressive amount of science that goes into these shoes. So yeah, for several weeks, I was immersed in shoe construction and learned everything there is to know about shoes. Not that I remember it or that I look for any of those aspects when I'm shopping for shoes. But yeah, there's a lot of science that goes into it, a lot of technology that goes into it, and there are appreciable differences between the different types of shoes that you can get.
Pop quiz. You go into a shoe store and they pull out that thing that measures your foot to determine what size shoe you need to wear.
They're always wrong.
What's the name of that measuring thing? What's the name of that thing? It's got a name.
The two-ended shoehorn?
It always says right foot here, so I think that must be the name.
Yes, I was going to go with the shoe sizenator.
It's called a Brannick device.
Brannick. And Ms. or Mr. Brannick, apparently
how
in a lab somewhere.
Because my buddy Joe used to sell shoes, and he'd like to throw the term Brannick device around a lot.
So
when
Mr.
we were in college.
The Al Bundy of his era.
Yeah, the ladies loved him.
Mr. Brannick has been forever memorialized by Constantine and Constantine only.
So like...
And
so,
Joe, obviously.
Well, since you had to throw some shade on my doctrine, I just wanted to test the limits of your knowledge of your own doctrine. I found it to be lacking.
Who's got some rocket science stuff we can have Constantine on?
Go for it.
Let me Google real quick.
We have the Renaissance lawyer, Colleen Kenny of Sidley Austin, who not only excels at math, but excels at the law. And then we have our motley crew, who is excelling at Adidas shoes, refrigerators, and perhaps two-sided shoe measurers. Why don't we start some of our games for this episode? Now, our next segment, Stump the Panel, where we attempt to see if we can get our panelists to identify very rudimentary small little equations here. Our first question.
You love this game, Danny.
I fail at this game constantly.
You beat me every time, I think.
I got one.
That was it Denver or whatever?
Colorado.
Oh, my God.
Still living off that.
You had to have been there. It was amazing. Anyway. Go ahead, sorry.
All right, now let's see if Constantine can redeem himself and go to the glory of victory.
Doubtful.
McDonald's runs its well-known Monopoly promotion every year in which customers collect game pieces from food packaging in the hopes of winning a free meal, an Xbox One bundle, or even a cash prize. A statistician recently ran the numbers and calculated the likelihood of winning. Mathematically, what are your odds of winning a $50,000 prize? Would you like a hint?
Of winning a $50,000.
A $50,000
prize. So not the big
prize.
One, not the Boardwalk Park Place grand prize.
Constantine, I'm going to help you out here. My very first job as a young teenager was at McDonald's. One time...
I remember you!
Hey!
Mine was too.
I was on the Big Mac grill. Where were you?
Well, you got to start on fries, man. Everybody starts on fries.
I was apple pie. Yeah.
Oh, well, fries and pies, yeah.
Yeah, and well, fries and pies were supposed to be separated in the oil vat, but sometimes they got mixed together, and so sometimes you had the apple fries.
Well, that was back when the apple pie was like this molten tort.
Now, we're not going to talk about tort feasers here.
Anyway,
we were, after the contest was over, sat back, and we opened all the little dooley boppers
that were left.
Yeah.
That seems to be...
What's a dooley bopper?
The little chits that you pull.
The game pieces.
Yeah.
Certain things
How
if
does
you
everybody
buy.
Everybody know this. Is this
Did you never
knowledge?
Play the McDonald's Monopoly
Because you don't
Monopoly
have
game?
Kids that you took and
They're
bought
stuck
Happy
to
Meals.
The
I mean, I was
the
a mere child only 15 years ago.
I know, but then you should know this because it was like if you bought the supersized fries, you get two of them. And if you buy a regular fry, you don't get any.
On top of it... Speaking of personal experience, and this was true of all those sweepstakes, like the publisher sweepstakes and everything else, where there's no purchase necessary, and it was very important in order to get around like gambling loopholes,
Yes.
And so my dad is a person of very strong faith and doesn't believe in gambling, so he'll eat at McDonald's and he would play the game, but he didn't want to do them at the same time. So we would drive to McDonald's, he would just run in and get game pieces.
Uh-huh.
And we'd go home and open them, and then other times we'd eat at McDonald's. So I was like,
I was going to say that we opened a lot of them, and we didn't win Jack. I mean, maybe a few fries, and that was about it. So this is your hint. The odds are not very good.
Okay.
Sorry, McDonald's.
I felt like I knew that without your hint.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right. That one doesn't count. Would you like another hint?
Let me just throw a number at you.
Sure.
Should I write it on a paper and slide it across the table?
The drama builds.
I'll say 1 in 5 million.
Not bad, but here's your first hint.
Ooh.
The odds of being struck by lightning are roughly 1 in 10 million. This win at McDonald's is rarer.
Oh.
Wow.
And all those times I've been struck by lightning for
nothing.
My
bubble has burst.
I mean, I really liked French fries, but not that much.
Yeah.
That's a lot of fries. All right, so I'm going to say 1 in 20 million.
All right, I'll give you another hint. The UK newspaper, The Telegraph.
There are infinite numbers for me to pick here, right?
A warmer, so colder.
This the number contains
Start
former
49.
Oh, 49. Wow, we have got ESP going on because the next hint is the number contains former San Francisco 49ers quarterback Joe Montana's jersey number. What was Joe Montana's jersey number?
I know he sang backup on Hip to Be Square and Huey Lewis, but I don't know his jersey number.
All right, we're going to go with Ms. Rooney's method of hotter and colder. You said 5, it's higher. You said 20, it's lower. You get one chance.
Oh, it's lower than 20. I didn't hear that 20. All right, 15.
Or something.
Oh, so close. Oh. 1 in 16 million.
Am I embarrassed? Like a sweet 16 birthday or something.
Yeah. That would have been good,
All right, Ms. Saroonian's going to give the hints in the next episode.
Yeah, it'll be much easier
for
you guys.
All right.
It's a whole new world.
Serve you a softball.
So that's bad. All right, now, Daniel Pelk, let's see if you can continue your winning ways. Harvard University, which launched a new master's program last year, credited that program for a 2% increase in international applications to its Graduate School of Arts and Sciences. What degree does the new program offer?
16 million.
As my contracts professor in law school said, giving the right answer at the wrong time gets you 0 credit.
I'm batting 1,000.
Would you like a hint, sir?
Yes, please.
It is the science of something that was also the name of a character in a Star Trek TV show and multiple Star Trek movies.
Well, that's got to be Data. So.
Yeah, Data science.
Ding, 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 ding.
I actually knew that. So. Uh-huh.
Thank you, Ms. Kenny. I appreciate that.
I actually knew that answer because I've been looking at those master's degree.
There was a guy named Data Science. And
no, he was Data. His name was Data. Lieutenant he was a robot.
Lieutenant Data, he's a, yes. And
but how
he,
awesome
he had, a, he had an evil twin robot.
Pretty nerdy.
Named Lore.
Oh.
What does that have to do with Data?
Data and Lore. Lore was the prototype that went crazy, and then Dr. Noonien and Soong built Data afterwards. It gave him an emotion chip that didn't freak out.
We are only just living to the stereotype, aren't we?
We are. Yeah. There's no doubt. Constantine, the pressure is now on because Counselor Kenny helped Counselor Pelk with that last one. We're still going to give you the chance for victory on the last question.
I appreciate this opportunity.
No, that's great. We are glad you're here. All right. Constantine's chance for redemption. Scientists have concocted a new nasal spray that has the potential as the first ever universal vaccine against the flu. The key ingredient is antibodies from what animal?
What animals don't get the flu?
I think I actually know this. I'm not going to say anything.
So you helped him.
I don't think you want an animal that doesn't get the flu. I think you want an animal that does get the flu because it's going to be antibodies from an animal for the flu. So it's got to be animals that do get the flu.
Yeah, unless it's genetically immune over centuries.
And the most recent outbreaks were swine and bird.
It has to be an animal that you cannot get the flu from.
Right.
All right, I'll take the first.
Colleen's being very helpful to both panelists. Let's just say that.
It's not a Pegasus.
Correct.
Okay, so let's.
Solid elimination.
I just felt very safe in that.
And now we have reaffirmation from Anna Saroonian.
Okay.
All right, your first hint. In a popular children's book, they wear colorful pajamas.
Well.
Oh, all right.
Elephant?
Not exactly close, but there's they do have, yeah. All right, sure, your next hint. They are sometimes confused for alpacas.
Is that llamas?
Yeah.
All right.
Llamas in pajamas.
Oh, well, there's another book. Is your mama a llama? That's a good book. I read to my kids all the time.
That sounds like a hip-hop song.
It probably could be very easily converted.
Or something.
I think you have an opportunity here.
Excellent. Well, Constantine Pappas, Daniel Pelk, we're going
to
call you both winners on this episode.
With
a lot of help from Colleen Kenny. Thank you very much.
Everybody gets a trophy.
Well, now it's time for Discover the Truth, and Ms. Saroonian is going to tell us the rules of the game.
Two of these cases are real, one is made up, and you need to pick the case that is fake. And if you get it right, we'll give you some relativity swag.
Free stuff!
Yes!
Colleen, as Ms. Cerunian mentioned, you have three cases here. Two of them are actual excerpts from American jurisprudence. One is fake. Your job here is to find the fake case. What do these three cases have in common? Well, after all, you are a partner at Sidley Austin. Ergo, all these cases have something to do with Austin. Now, of course, Counselor Pelk will be one of our consultants on this, but Colleen Kenny of Sidley Austin, your first case is World Wrestling Federation Entertainment, Inc. v. Big Dog Holdings. Any of our listeners out there who are wrestling fans have undoubtedly heard of Stone Cold Steve Austin, perhaps Hulk Hogan, and the other various characters who make wrestling what it is, the pageantry for the people. In this case, Big Dog Holdings had some ideas about how to use the wrestling characters. They didn't just have Stone Cold Steve Austin or Hulk Hogan. They had characters based on Star Wars villains, such as Emperor Palpatine, Bark Maul, and of course, Holly Wolf, Hound Hogan, and Bone Cold Steve Austin. Trademark litigation ensued. WWE filed a 17-count amended complaint asserting various claims against Big Dog Holdings. It came out with these paws from outer space, including copyright infringement, trademark infringement, and false designation of origin under the Lanham Act. They battled it out, and the holding of the court was that Big Dog parodies the wrestling characters and is entitled to the free expression of the First Amendment. Furthermore, the court held that there was unlikely to be consumer confusion, a necessary standard under the Federal Lanham Act. So, Colleen, your first case is Stone Cold Steve Austin and those wonderful pets of wrestling.
Now, we're going to stay with this IP theme for our second case. Daniel Pelk, would you like to help out Colleen Kenny? You feeling this one's real? Feeling it's fake?
You know, This one really could go either way for me because I love the idea of the dogs. I think the dog thing is fantastic, but it seems a little remote for me.
All right.
So I'm going to think this one might be fake.
All right.
Our second case is Austin City Limits Public Television Trust v. County Line Productions, LLC. In this case, William Ralph Nelson, known to family and friends as Big Billy, was a standout defensive lineman at Texas A&M University, who later moved from College Station to Austin, Texas, and gained local fame with his restaurant, Big Billy's Barbecue on the Brazos. Being the industrious guy that Mr. Nelson was, he decided a great way to publicize his restaurant was to have a public access TV show, and that was Big Billy Nelson at the Austin County Line. Because he owned a restaurant, for his viewers' enjoyment, he performed songs on the public access show, such as Always on My Menu, Mamas Don't Let Your Babies Grow Up to Be Short Order Cooks, and My Heroes Have Always Been Big Tippers. Not only did Big Billy have songs that were based loosely on Willie Nelson, he also had a rudimentary set at the back of Billy Bob's restaurant with murals of the Austin skyline painted by local elementary school students that, yeah, quite intentionally, looked a lot like the set for the popular public television show Austin City Limits. At first, Austin City Limits Public Television Trust, a nonprofit formed by Austin PBS station KLRU to produce Austin City Limits, didn't really mind Big Billy's humorous efforts to publicize his restaurant. But then when he started going up in the ratings on advice of counsel, KLRU's trust sent multiple cease and desist orders to Big Billy. Big Billy, not one to be intimidated by the friendly folks at public television, decided this was an even better opportunity to publicize the restaurant. He penned a new song, Kermit and Miss Piggy Are Trying to Take My Bacon, which became wildly popular with students at the University of Texas at Austin. Finally, Miss Piggy had enough, and the trust sued Big Billy's production company, County Line Productions, seeking injunctive relief and damages. Of course, Big Billy countered that his use was clear parody, a fair use exception to trademark infringement under the Trademark Dilution Revision Act of 2006. In addition, the production company argued there was real no likelihood of confusion under the Lanham Act, noting that Austin was in Travis County, not Austin County, and let's face it, no one took Billy Bob's parody seriously. When the court rejected a motion for summary judgment, Big Billy and the Trust settled. Among the terms were disclaimers on each Big Billy broadcast, noting the public access show had no affiliation with Austin City Limits, KLRU, the Trust, PBS. Yeah, and as far as we know, Miss Piggy or Kermit either. Miss Cerunian, how are you feeling about that case? You want to help Colleen out at all?
I don't know that I even followed that case.
Ah, Daniel Pelt?
I got Big Willie Nelson, and that in itself.
That's where it ended.
Yeah. I just have a visual in my head of a very large Willie Nelson lookalike sitting on a stool playing a banjo. That in itself entertained me for the entire time he was talking.
For sure. It sounds real.
You are always on my menu. You are always on my menu.
I would like you to do the Short Order Cook song. That sounds fantastic.
Oh, that one's tougher. Mamas, don't let your babies grow up.
Up
the Wrangler. The Wrangler, Miss Cerunian, is stopping me from singing. All right, darn. Well, there goes my career.
Stick to the law.
Counselor Kenny.
You know, I would hope that wasn't true. That's just all I'm saying is I would hope that wasn't true.
You're a public TV fan?
Willie Nelson is really a skinny little guy. So he if is? He's going to be, he's how can you possibly be 350 pounds and look like Willie Nelson? Maybe all he has is long gray beards, right?
Could be.
Yeah.
Could be.
He's got some distinguishing characteristics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The bandana.
Yeah.
Sure.
The braids.
Yeah.
The guitar. Miss Arunian, would you like me to sing another one?
No.
Oh, yeah, I didn't think so.
Next case.
All right, once again, because Colleen Kinney is a partner at Sidley Austin, we're continuing this theme of Austin cases. This one involves Austin Powers. Mm. This one is Billy Bob Teeth v. Novelty, Inc.
Why is there a lot of Billy Bobs?
Because we're in Texas.
Right.
Fair enough.
Exactly. When international man of mystery Austin Powers gazes at British agent Kensington and purrs, "Groovy baby," or "Oh, behave," he always smiles, exposing a set of teeth that the best orthodontist in the world could not improve. They're ugly, but therein lies their beauty, at least from a financial point of view. This copyright trademark dress case involves novelty teeth, oversized, crooked, and chipped teeth that fit over a person's real teeth. People wear them to get a laugh. Actor Mike Myers wore them when, as Austin Powers, he foiled the diabolical plans of Dr. Evil to achieve world domination. What does this have to do with case law today? Well, got to take the story back a little bit. Jonah White saw teeth when he went to a football game where, through a mutual friend, he met Rich Bailey, who showed him a set. White testified that Bailey was just making a joke, "I'm kind of a jokester," and White gave him a pair of the teeth. Suddenly, commerce ensued. White had help from his mother. They ran the business out of her kitchen. White put an 800 phone line into one of the hutches in the kitchen, and he testified in court that his mom would answer the phone if he wasn't present. Of his mother, White testified, "Half the time she was my mom, half the time she was my boss, and half the time she was the secretary." The business grew, and as we noted, it had a big payday when Austin Powers decided to use his teeth. Not only that, it was featured in the Wall Street Journal, People Magazine, Time Magazine, numerous television shows, including The Today Show and Rosie O'Donnell. But why is this a sad story? Well, enter stage left, the fake Billy Bob teeth. There were fake Taiwanese teeth, and there were copyright claims because Novelty, Inc. was trying to sell teeth from its Taiwanese manufacturer. Billy Bob, of course, once again brings us to IP law and claims of trademark infringement. Billy Bob sued, alleging copyright and trade dress infringement, and a jury awarded Billy Bob $105,000 in damages for copyright infringement on novelty sale of Billy Bob teeth, $30,000 in damages on the sale of another fake brand, Hilljack teeth, and over $7,000 in damages for trade dress infringement. There you have it. It's a tough, tough decision you've got here.
Two Billy Bobs.
Two Billy Bobs and a stone-cold Steve Austin. So, Colleen Kenny, what do you think? Could it be stone-cold Steve Austin and the wrestlers? Could it be the fake Willie Nelson and the fake Austin City Limits? Or could it be the dental student and those teeth? Which
yes.
one's fake?
Depends.
No, the answer is yes. Well, What do you think?
Well, here's how I figure it. The Austin Powers thing is phenomenal.
That sounds real to
it
me.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah, that one sounds real.
And I could imagine people at football games wearing those teeth, although I'm not sure that they were fake. That's where he saw it for the first time.
But just like, that's not... Do you know what I mean? Like,
I get a vision in my head and I go with it. I can see that being real. And I could see that
people
happening.
Come to football games like practically naked, dressed in full body
You're
paint.
Right.
So.
Mm-hmm. You're
the,
right.
Oh, the overalls.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see that a lot too. So that one feels real to me. The first two I'm sort of caught between. The Billy Bob thing, although I love, Billy Bob won the singer.
I think that's the one, but I think that's not true. All right, I'm going to pick number two.
She's going to pick number two. She is, in fact, very good at case law. She got the fake one.
Yeah.
That
well
one
done.
Is fake.
I like that.
And we wrote them to try to stump you on that one, but you were not stumpable.
Well, just well, I like, think I actually read the case about Cold Steve Austin for some reason. So I think I actually knew that one was real.
That came up in your research?
Well.
Constantine turns into a pumpkin in 20 minutes. So
I can't do this by myself.
And what is the act of turning into a pumpkin? There's a word for it.
Cinderella?
Transmorph.
I think it's called working.
If you know it's a classical literature term, going back to my comp lit degree.
Aha. Uh-huh.
The Greek word is, are you ready?
Ready.
Apokalosyntosis.
That is impressive.
Wow.
It's the act of pumpkinification.
Even though you are of Greek descent, I am still in awe of your ability to recite that word.
I don't remember much from college, but that's the thing that stuck with me.
That is way
you
more.
Apokalosyntosis, huh?
Greek school?
I did go to Greek school, but I didn't learn it there. I learned it in a ancient literature class in college.
Wow.
In Madison, yeah.
That Brannick device holds nothing on that.
Well, it's a play on the term apotheosis. So basically there was, I forget if it was Seneca or who wrote it, but there was a Roman writer that was parodying a book about the apotheosis of Caesar or somebody else. And so he created this parody book about pumpkinification.
Very studious right now.
Is it only pumpkins, or if you turn into other pieces of produce, is it the same term? Or
no, because I think that the apokalo part is the pumpkin is the word for pumpkin. So I think it is very specific to that gourd subfamily.
Should we move on?
Yeah.
If you want, but
thank
I'm having
Ms.
fun.
Support for this episode of Uncivil Procedure has been brought to you by Special Counsel. Information is everywhere. Special Counsel helps you use it. Get the most advanced technology, the training, and the ongoing support you need to reduce the risk and cost of e-discovery. Stop waiting and sifting through information and start strategizing and winning.
Our predictions for this episode. We're going to get answers from, of course, our guest, Colleen Kenny of Sidley Austin, but also from our dynamic duo of Daniel Pelk and Constantine Pappas. We're going to go back to childhood here.
Mm.
Let's say your e-discovery science fair project is due tomorrow. What are you going to demo, and what materials are you going to use? Once again, your e-discovery science fair project is due tomorrow. What are you going to demo, and what materials are you going to use?
You got something?
I do.
Go.
Oh, all right. Daniel Pelk.
So I participated in the 6th grade science fair at Lakeshore Elementary School in Mequon, Wisconsin. And my science fair project was a Venus flytrap. And I created a Venus flytrap using paper mache and using wire. This thing was awesome. I didn't win the science fair, and I'm still a little upset by that, but I didn't win. But it was a phenomenal Venus flytrap. It was about 3 feet tall. And I actually had a Venus flytrap, like a real Venus flytrap there. Since that was so effective for me, I would like to somehow figure out how we can include the Venus flytrap as far as document review so that it actually consumes documents that you are no longer going to be requiring. And sort of a visualization to make you feel good about the fact that that document you don't need is now gone.
You want to live like the real life Little Shop of Horrors?
Yes. Yes. Feed me Seymour. Absolutely.
So you're going to be the plant of spoliation. Wow.
Audrey 2.
Audrey 2.
Wow.
Constantine Pappas.
How are you going to follow that?
Yeah.
Wow. Just so challenging today.
But you've done well under pressure today.
Have I?
You have.
I don't feel like I have. But I appreciate your kind words. I'm going to venture into the realm of science fiction as long as it's
counts.
Hypothetical, right?
We're on a roll. Keep going.
So I want to be able to control with my mind the review process. I want to be able to advance to the next document or
I
kick off an
image.
This is Relativity 5000, that I want to be able to just telepathically or through nerve impulses or whatever, or maybe some hand gestures too, interact with the software without having to use a mouse and keyboard.
So like eDiscovery Minority Report.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, I did go to state in 7th and 8th grade for my science fair.
Whoa!
You
science,
didn't see this
math,
buried
the law.
But it's in my first, my 7th grade.
That was a hell of a volcano.
My 7th grade science fair project was about the evils of smoking. And I had like a tissue and cotton balls in a clear see-through thing, and I had it smoke so you could see how black it got. And my dad was a smoker. Wow. And my 8th grade science fair project was about the evils of alcohol. And I made... Wow.
There are no vices in the Kinney home.
And nevertheless. But I was watching 30 on 30. And I'm
ESPN,
not,
yeah.
Yeah, and I can't remember now the player's name, but it was an NFL player who has ALS. He's 42 years old. I forget his name.
He plays for the Patriots.
He played for the Patriots. Or maybe it was on I was watching it during the Patriot game. Anyway, he is completely now debilitated from the shoulders basically down, and all he has is his eyes. And he, through eye movement and facial movement, he is able to manipulate the computer that he has attached to him, so like a keyboard where he types with like just eye movements and facial tics, and so I think the technology's out there. You just need to make. I like that, and
thank you.
And I think that you just need to take that technology and expand it to review.
It's a good one, but before we get to that, I need to apologize to the good people of New Orleans because it was not a Patriots player. It was, of course, Steve Gleason of the New Orleans Saints.
Oh, that's right.
Because the Saints Patriots are my two favorite teams. And the reason this is such a slight to New Orleans is that Steve Gleason is very famous for, after Hurricane Katrina, when there were questions there was questions whether New Orleans would get the team back. Luckily, the Saints did return to New Orleans after the hurricane, and Steve Gleason blocked the punt. And there is a statue of Steve Gleason in front of the Superdome to this day. Good one, Colleen Kenny.
But he has ALS, and it's really, really debilitating ALS.
Interesting.
That's awful.
That's
so maybe not
SquarePants.
Science fiction. Maybe it's just science.
It's there,
near
but
future.
It's probably not something you got that Relativity could offer next year. I mean, it's probably not that advanced.
Yeah, you have a lot of developers.
Yeah.
I just think that's because I mean, even using Relativity, sometimes I think I don't want to take the 2 seconds it takes to click. It would be nice to go and have it move to the next document.
I agree.
I'm thinking the Tom Cruise sweep from Minority Report where he's moving things on.
That's a lot of work. That's like playing video games with motion controls. Seems like a really fun idea. And if you're like
a
5-year-old that needs to jump around in the living room, that's really cool.
It's a
but some of us just
want
to play video games without waving our arms.
Yeah, but
around.
We can swipe things now. I mean,
it's control.
I want to use my mind. I don't want to be waving my arms around.
But then you're
going to
become,
in
those science fiction movies, we're all just going to become blobs. We don't need arms. We don't need, what's that?
That's 20, Wally.
In the year 2525, we got no arms, we got no legs.
That is Wally.
Yeah.
So we'll be drinking giant cups of soda while reviewing our documents.
Yeah.
Colleen Kenny of Sidley Austin, you continue to put us to shame with your vast knowledge. But what would you do for your science fair project?
I would steal.
Aha! The most sincere form of flattery.
Now who's going to state?
So you want the Venus flytrap too?
No, huh? Somehow I've done smoking. I've done the evils of alcohol. I probably need to do something like the evils of something.
Slow review.
Perhaps. The evils of failure to use analytics. No, I really like the idea of just being able to quickly go through things. I also like the idea of quickly getting rid of documents, but I actually think technology is pretty much there already to quickly get rid of the garbage. I think that we're pretty there. I mean, we already kind of have Venus flytraps out there to get rid of garbage documents. So maybe what I would like to invent is I'll put a brain in a black box, and I'll bring it with me, and I'll tell everyone it's tar.
Yeah, but would you be able to explain it to the judge?
Well, it depends.
Ms. Saronian, you want to jump in on a science fair project?
No, I like Danny's.
The Venus flytrap?
Yeah, but like a legit Venus flytrap. I don't want any computer stuff. I want a real one.
That actually eats the...
Yeah.
Ooh, I like that. Yeah,
you're... Little Shop of Horrors, yeah. IRL.
Love it. Love it. Thank you for the support. I appreciate
it. You're welcome. I felt like you needed it.
I did. I felt knocked
teamwork,
out.
Fans. Teamwork.
But you got up again.
I did. In a Scottish accent. That's right.
Daniel Pelt, Constantine Pappas, and of course, Anna Saroonian, thank you for being here. And to our guest, Colleen Kenny, partner at Sidley Austin, thank you for being here, sharing your expertise. It's not often we get to have someone who has passed the CPA exam, the Certified Management Accountant exam, and oh yeah, that walk in the park, the easy bar exam. Colleen Kenny, thank you so much for
thank
being
you,
here.
Thank you, thank you. It's really a lot of fun. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us today on this episode of Uncivil Procedure. A big thanks to our Relativian panelists, Constantine Pappas and Daniel Pelk. Our guest was Colleen Kenny of Sidley Austin. Our host was David Horrigan. Our sponsor was Special Counsel. Thanks to a few folks who made Uncivil Procedure possible and civil. Nicholas Matijic, sound and recording engineer. Sam Bach and Christy Esparza were the masterminds behind some of our content. Tammy Yosisovic is our casting director. Carl Sondrel created our theme music. Gus Tsitsakis created our visual brand. Brendan Ryan is our podcast creator and executive producer. Sean Gaines is our podcast marketing overlord. And I'm Anna Saroonian, your David Horrigan Wrangler. And we'll see you next time on Uncivil Procedure. Mic drop.
Continue the Uncivil Procedure conversation on social media via Twitter and Instagram. Just follow us at UncivProPodcast. Tag your thoughts with the hashtag UncivilProcedure and connect with our panelists in the Uncivil Procedure discussion group on the Relativity community.